So the question is, how does one create, build, and protect and multiply your wealth in a global interconnected economy where change is happening rapidly and constantly, and financial markets are rigged to benefit financial institutions and enrich corporate insiders? I've made it my mission to uncover how you can create, protect, and multiply your wealth in any economy, and have interviewed the top investors and wealth experts for over 3 years. I share what I've learned from them and continue to learn on my journey. I'm MC Lobsher, and this is Cashflow Investing Secrets. Hello, everyone. MC Lobsher, and thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Cashflow Investing Secrets podcast. This is, of course, the show where cash is not king. Cashflow is king. This show is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin. Swan Bitcoin is one of the best platforms to open up your Bitcoin savings account. I've looked at many different platforms, and I've really enjoyed my experience on Swan Bitcoin. I personally use them. You could set up a Bitcoin automated savings account where you can deduct a couple of $100 a week from a bank account and buy Bitcoin with it at Swan Bitcoin. And when you go to swanbitcoin.com/cashflowninja, you'll get $10 in Bitcoin for opening up your Bitcoin savings account. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. Over 850 podcasts, tools, resources, programs. And then, of course, my book, which I've been getting a lot of compliments on. Thank you so much for everyone that has supported me with this book, The 21 Best Cashflow Niches, Creating Wealth and the Best Alternative Cashflow Investments. It's available on Amazon, and it's also available at cashflowninja.com. When you buy the book, you get access to a digital version, an audio version, a curated library of interviews where ninjas discuss the cashflow niches and more bonus goodies. Just screenshot a proof of your purchase, send it to my team at info@cashflowninja.com, and you'll get your ticket to the magic. By the way, one of the most important things right now is have diversified income streams. This book will give you ideas of many different niches and how you can diversify your income through different niches in this crazy new world that we're living in right now. So in today's episode, I wanted to talk about counterparty risk and what it is and why it matters. And as you know, I'm an open book. I give you my best insights and ideas, which are relevant at the time. And I cannot state how important it is to really be aware of what counterparty risk is right now, and how to manage counterparty risk, especially in the environment that we're in today. As you know, I like to dive into definitions of what things are before I talk about them. So let's talk about the definition of counterparty risk. Counterparty risk is the likelihood or probability that one of those involved in a transaction might default on its contractual obligation. Counterparty risk can exist in credit, investment, and trading transactions. You know, one of the things about the West, especially Western civilization and Western society, and is contracts and honoring contracts when entering into them, holding up your end of the agreement, right? It's essentially what Western civilization and Western society is based on. Just think of all of the many different contracts that you enter just living in the West. And it's all over the world right now. So it's extremely important to understand the importance of contracts, the importance of contractual obligations. And when you're entering contracts and what the risks are of entering those contracts. So specifically, when you think about allocating capital today in the world that we're in today, and capital that's a little bit more liquid, right? There's obviously capital that you will allocate that's not as liquid, that's very illiquid. Example, real estate. And when you're investing in real estate with folks, right? And we've talked many, many different times of how to find the best operators operating in the best markets, doing the best deals that are great custodians and great stewards of your capital. You have to look at their their track record, right? How they've behaved in the past is a very big indicator of how they will behave in the future. That also comes into play when you're looking at allocating a more liquid capital. So what do I mean by that? Banks, financial products as such as stocks, bonds, trading accounts, folks that have gold and silver that are held with custodians, and then also cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology assets of like, right? More liquid than a real estate investment. So when it comes to allocating capital, it's extremely important to understand counterparty risk, especially right now. I have shared many, many different times on this show that, yes, it's important of what your money is obviously allocated in, what vehicle it is positioned in, your capital, or what it is invested in. But what's even more important, especially in chaotic, disruptive, and confusing environments, is who that capital is invested with, whether it be a person or an institution. Here's an example for you. So during 2008 and 2009, let's just say in 2007, before the 2008-2009 financial crisis, you had a brokerage account with Lehman Brothers or Bear Stearns. For the younger listeners and viewers, they're not around anymore. Both went under. But let's just say you had capital allocated in them with a broker, and you had instructed that broker to short the market in 2007. You were right because the market crashed, right? You were right, absolutely. But you still lost all of your money. So even though you were right, because you didn't understand counterparty risk and you didn't understand how to manage counterparty risk, and understand how important it is who your money is with, or with who that capital is allocated, rather than just the strategy that you're implementing and executing, you lost everything. All the capital that was allocated there, right? So that's how important it is. So this conversation right now is a conversation everybody should be having, because there are many red flags right now out there. So let me start big picture. Big picture approach to this. Let's talk global. Let's talk governments. So now we've obviously seen this war with Russia and Ukraine is not over yet. It's still going on, and there's a lot of confusion and noise and misinformation, regardless of which end of or which side you're on, what your opinion is. If I just have to look at this objectively, it is as clear as daylight that all the information you're getting from the Russian side is all misinformation, all fake news. All of the information from the Ukrainian side and the news that you're getting is all fake news, all misinformation. And from Western media covering this, you know, I've already ranted about that. It's all fake news. It's all misinformation. But regardless of where you stand on this or what your opinion is, if you look at this objectively, you see now with the sanctions that the United States and European countries have put on Russia, there's a couple of things that's very disturbing. So the first thing is the freezing or seizure of reserve assets held outside of the Russian country in US dollars and euros. I think it's up to $300 billion, almost half of their foreign exchange reserves. So that's a little bit of a red flag there. Then we saw Russia being removed from the SWIFT system and Russian banks being removed from the SWIFT system, which is how you can wire international money. It's like a settlement a system of sending one money from one place to another place and from one party to another party, especially internationally. Then we saw Visa and MasterCard, which is payment processing systems, kicking out Russia. This is the corporate angle. And more corporations pulled out of Russia, and they actually kicked off Russian citizens as users on their platform. One of the disturbing things that I saw was that Coinbase closed and basically froze 25,000 approximately crypto accounts and holdings of Russian citizens. So think about it this way, right? So you could be born in Russia, just like you were born in the country that you're in. And because of where you were born and where you live, maybe you have nothing to do with or the decisions that a government's making. You don't have anything to do with that. You might not even agree with it, but because you are living in that country, you are now blocked, or you cannot access certain services, or you cannot even, you know, go on your crypto exchange to access your crypto, like your Bitcoin. If your Bitcoin was on Coinbase and you're a Russian citizen, you could now have lost your Bitcoin. That's very, very disturbing. Again, regardless of what your opinion is of this war that's going on between Russia and Ukraine, you have to think about the people that involved that have nothing to do with this on both sides. So that's very, very disturbing right there. Red flag, huge red flag, right? We've seen it now with governments. We've seen it with corporations. We've seen the behaviors that they're exhibiting. How about Canada? Did we almost forget about that already? It feels like a long time ago, but it's a couple of weeks ago that the Canadian truckers and the people that were supporting them were severely punished. Again, it started with corporations. So there's like a crowdsourcing platform, which people open up an account with and raised funds for the truckers, GoFundMe. And then all of a sudden they said, no, this is not a desirable cause that you're raising money for. We're just going to seize this. And because of public outrage, they had to release the funds that people could at least pull it from it, but they were going to steal the money, essentially. That's what it is. It's another breaking of a contractual obligation. And then it went over to GiveSendGo, which is a Christian crowdsourcing platform, which then there was issues with that too, especially with the Canadian government getting involved. But essentially the big lesson there with the trucker protest was that the truckers and everybody that supported them had bank accounts frozen and had financial products that they own frozen. There's actually a member of the Canadian Parliament which shared in the parliament that there was a single mother that donated $50 to the truckers that had her bank account frozen. Huge red flag, huge red flag. So there's a lot of these. I mean, we could go on and on and on about all the red flags that are out there that eventually will affect us, our families, our businesses, and our investments. And I've shared in other episodes things that you could do right now to put yourself in a position where you wouldn't be out of options, right? You want to make decisions when you still have options available to you. Another big red flag that is very, very, very disturbing, and this has been something that's been around for a while, but for younger viewers or listeners that might not be familiar with this, this is good just sharing again. Most countries right now have in their laws established a bail-in provision that will allow banks in the coming crisis to actually seize the funds of account holders to recapitalize the banks. So if we go to Investopedia, they actually did a whole article on bail-ins and why this is basically a done deal in the coming crisis. And this is what Investopedia says, just to explain this. With a bank bail-in, the bank uses the money of its unsecured creditors, including depositors and bondholders. Just going to pause there for a second. If you put money in a bank, you are an unsecured creditor. You don't own that money. In the way that the laws that are on the books all over the world in the majority of countries are written. So with a bank bail-in, the bank uses the money of its unsecured creditors, including depositors and bondholders, to restructure their capital so it can stay afloat. In effect, the bank is allowed to convert its debt into equity for the purpose of increasing its capital requirements. A bank can undergo a bail-in quickly through a resolution proceeding, which provides immediate relief to the bank. The obvious risk to the bank depositors is the possibility of losing a portion of their deposits. However, the depositors have the protection of the FDIC, insuring each bank account for up to $250,000. Banks are required to use only those deposits in excess of the $250,000 protection. Here's a fun fact for you. Go to your favorite browser. I would recommend that you use the Brave browser right now because Google is not going to give you all the information. And recently, DuckDuckGo just revealed their colors, their true colors, so you're not going to get the information there, but the Brave browser will. If you look and read your research into this, the FDIC has admitted already that they don't have the funds to cover all of the deposits that are on the books with banks in the United States in the event of a crisis. So they've admitted this. So huge red flag, obviously. And bail-ins, if you think this is a far-fetched theory, this has already happened in Cyprus. Please do your research on that as well. Another red flag that I looked at recently, which was a little bit disturbing, was an exercise that was going on. I love it how they call these things exercises. But this is from Reuters. So Reuters did an article. This was at the end of last year. They've done another one since then on this. But this is the heading of this article. Exclusive: IMF and 10 countries simulate cyber attack on global financial system. The IMF and 10 countries simulate cyber attack on global financial system. Let's read the first two paragraphs here. This definitely looks interesting. Israel on Thursday led a 10-country simulation of a major cyber attack on the global financial system in an attempt to increase cooperation that could help to minimize any potential damage to financial markets and banks. The simulated war game, as Israel's finance ministry called it, and planned over the past year, evolved over 10 days with sensitive data emerging on the dark web. The simulation also used fake news reports that in the scenario caused chaos in global markets and a run on the banks. Isn't that interesting? Doesn't give me warm and fuzzy feelings, by the way. This simulation, likely caused by what officials called sophisticated players, featured several types of attacks that impacted global foreign exchange and bond markets, liquidity, integrity of data, and transactions between importers and exporters. These events are creating havoc in the financial markets, said a narrator of a film shown to the participants as part of the simulation and as seen by Reuters. Isn't that interesting? Economic havoc, financial markets in chaos, run on banks. This is an exercise that they're currently having. What also doesn't make me give me a very warm and fuzzy feeling is a similar exercise called Cyber Polygon, where the World Economic Forum played a leading role in, was held last year. And I believe there's another one scheduled in the year that we're currently recording this in, which simulated a cyber pandemic, a hacking of the internet, if you will, making internet use unsafe. So when you look at those things, there's a lot of red flags. And here's how I look at it, right? We don't have a crystal ball. We don't have a crystal ball. No one can predict the future. The crystal ball business, by the way, is a tough one. Ask a lot of the folks that have been pundits and prognosticators over the past 20 years. It's very, very tough game. And nobody's Nostradamus. So it's not a worthwhile exercise in trying to be that. But what you can do is you could look at all these themes that are emerging, these red flags, these things that we're seeing out there, and we could come to the conclusion that, wow, we should be aware of counterparty risk. We should be aware not only what we what vehicle our capital is allocated in, but with who, because it doesn't look like people are fulfilling contractual obligations, whether it be central banks, whether it be governments, whether it be payment processors, corporations, whether it be banks. It doesn't look like a lot of folks are taking this contract thing, which has been the glue of our world and a foundation of our world, seriously. So that being said, you know, when you cannot predict the future, you need to prepare yourself for anything and everything, as I've mentioned already on the show. And number two, when you're trying to determine risk factors of custodians and people that your capital is allocated with, whether it be people or institutions, a worthwhile exercise is to look at what they've done previously and in their past. The chances are very good. There's a very high probability that they're going to behave and take the same actions in the future. So that's a principle from a risk assessment standpoint. Another principle that I would look at is when you don't have access to your capital or the vehicle that your capital is allocated in or the form that it's positioned in, you don't own it. And there's counterparty risk. So I'll give you an example. And here's some solutions to this, by the way. Money in the bank. The banks have told you, they literally, in all most of the laws in most countries, they have told you, you are an unsecured creditor. It's out there, black and white, for everyone that wants to see it. So if you don't want to see it, this really, you just have to take it on the chin when the punch gets landed, right? So at this stage, cash on hand. The cash on hand that you have for several months to get you through a couple of months for emergencies, that's cash that you actually own. Only keep in the bank 1 to 2 to 3 months of working capital for your personal business and investing economy. Banks will be sacrificial lambs in this coming crisis. Yes, I understand there's a couple of dark state actors that will survive, the Goldman Sachs's, the Bank of America's, the JP Morgan Chase's. I understand it. But it's in the next crisis, just know that bail-ins, it's in place. It's going to happen. Very high probability. The cash that you have on hand is cash that you're actually going to own. The other place that I also have cash is in mutual insurance companies. Now, again, I don't have that in my position, but I have that with a custodian. So the first principle comes into play. The first principle is when you do your risk assessment, how has this person or this institution behaved in the past? Because it's a very high likelihood or probability that they will behave similarly in the future. Now, mutual insurance companies, and I'm talking top-rated, best in the business, have been around almost 200 years. They have been through monetary resets. They have been through economic booms, economic busts, inflation, deflation. They've been through several currency resets, as I've already shared. Just think about this. They were around in 1971, August 15th, when Richard Nixon closed the gold window. They were around when the Bretton Woods Agreement was signed in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, after the Second World War. They were around in 1913 when the Federal Reserve Bank and the Federal Reserve banking system was created. So they've been around for a long time. And seen all of this, and their behavior and their track record is pretty spectacular if you look at how long they've been around. One of the carriers that I have a policy with has been around since 1847 and paid dividends since 1847 every single year, which means they were profitable every single year. So that leads me to believe, objectively, that these are great custodians and stewards of capital. So that's how I look at it from a risk assessment standpoint. So have cash on hand, have even some stable coins in a cold storage vehicle when we talk crypto, and also look at then if you have capital allocated in another place, do a risk assessment on the counterparty risk at play here, the custodian, the person that the capital is allocated with. That's why Switzerland was such a desirable place throughout centuries up until 2022, when they just changed their tune with, of course, what's going on with Russia. Friends, these folks didn't, they allowed the Nazis to bank with them. Okay. Let me just put it that way. They were neutral. They've always been neutral. They've got the square flag. You know, they don't pick sides, but even they have casted their weight on the side of the United States and Europe this time against Russia. So that was a desirable location, let's just say, for precious metals. I wouldn't say that's a desirable location right now if I have to do a counterparty risk assessment. So we've talked about having cash on hand that you can access, then you own it. Gold and silver, same thing. Have some gold and silver. Money throughout centuries, they've never lost their value. They will always be worth something. Their value has never gone to zero. Have some physically on hand. And then when you do choose a custodian, do your analysis and look at the counterparty risk of that custodian. I would argue it's starting to become pretty high all over the world, regardless of where your gold and silver is stored, if it's outside of, you know, outside of your residence. And of course, you cannot keep everything, you know, in a safe and have it in self-custody. So you would have to spread it across different vaults in different, in different countries, and do it in such a manner that you would be okay with it, that if one or two of those places do get hit. So something to think about. And hit meaning they funds would get seized, or the gold and silver holdings would get seized, or you couldn't get access to them. And then also, of course, crypto. Crypto is something that you could go on exchange like Bitcoin. You could buy it and you can transfer it to cold storage, which is in your position. And then you have your keys. Remember, when you don't have your keys, it's not your coins. You're not the owner of those coins if you don't have the keys. If it's with a custodian, whether it be a centralized lending platform, they have the keys to those coins and they are technically the owners of those coins. So you need to transfer it and take possession of it. I'm going to also share with you, when it comes to doing transactions, not for speculation or not for gambling, privacy coins is a place to also look at and just learn about it. Like privacy coins like Monero and Pirate Chain has put their efforts towards coming up with a money solution, money that you can own and use and spend that's private. And those are the two best projects that I'm aware of. Again, this is not an investment recommendation. This is not financial advice. This is just something that would be, I would say, useful and handy if you want to buy goods and services and you're basically locked out everywhere else. So this is truly just for the function of using money and paying for things, not to make a quick buck speculating. The same thing with privacy projects such as Dero, which is the privacy version of Ethereum. You know, people are going to look at Ethereum, and that's great. It's a great platform. Let's just say smart contracts, but it's all public information. I would like to argue that especially corporations, in, let's just say, I don't know, the pharmaceutical space or the defense contractor space or, the food space or the big agri space, are not going to want everything public. So they're probably going to lean towards privacy contracts where things are coded, but it's all private and it's not public information. So that's what I mean by a private solution, and moving things on a private blockchain. just learn more about it. You're not going to regret it. You'll be more educated and understand that there is a solution in case you would need to transact with a privacy coin if you needed to buy goods and services. Anyway, so those are some of the solutions. I shared with you the red flags that are out there, things that should have every single person be on alert with just by seeing what's going on. And then also some principles, you know, when you're doing counterparty risk assessment, look at how they've behaved in the past, people and governments. They're most likely, and there's a very high probability that they're going to behave the same in the future. When you don't have access to things, just already think about it in a way that you don't have ownership to that. Somebody else has ownership of that, and that ownership can be revoked at any time because they can break their contractual obligations, which governments, corporations, and people are doing all over the place right now. And you know, follow the rule with the crypto too, especially with crypto. If you don't have the keys to the coins, it's not your coins. So it kind of falls into that. If you don't have access to it, you don't have ownership over it. And learn more about privacy coins. Another thing that I'll also share is a lot of folks have talked about online banks that don't have physical location. There's a whole bunch of them all over the world. Some of them have banking licenses, some of them don't. That is great. But if the internet's down or most banks are basically down, I could see that you would be in a similar situation with those companies and those institutions too, especially if they have a banking license. They would probably take orders from a central bank or one of these branches of the Federal Reserve, if they're in the United States, or that they fall in the jurisdiction of. Personally, I'm not spending a lot of time focusing on that. I'm kind of staying away from that. I've shared with you my best insights and thinking, my solutions. And of course, I always appreciate you spending your most valuable resource, your time, joining me on this show. If you find what we do valuable here, please share. That's our currency. We're trying to help as many people as we can. So if you find this valuable and you want to help other folks too, to position themselves, to be in a better position if things happen. You'll be in a better position anyway if nothing happens. But if you want to help other folks, please share what we do here with your family, your friends, and people in your network. And for everything Cashflow Ninja, go to cashflowninja.com. And the show is, of course, brought to you by Swan Bitcoin. If you want to open a Bitcoin savings account, go to swanbitcoin.com/cashflowninja, and you will get $10 in Bitcoin for just opening up your Bitcoin savings account. Until next time, live infinitely. If you are interested in learning more about cash flow investing, I have compiled the 21 best cash flow investing strategies I have come across studying millionaires and billionaires for two decades and interviewing over 500 successful investors and wealth experts. You can grab the 21 cash flow investing strategy secrets at 21cashflowinvestingsecrets.com. That's 21, the number, cashflowinvestingsecrets.com.